Shabbos Perek Ches Mishnah Aleph 8:1. The Mishnah continues to discuss the various shiurim, the quantities for which one would be liable for hotzah if one transferred on Shabbos. Again, the idea being that if it's not a significant amount of something, then it's not a significant act of transference. Therefore, the Mishnah says we're going to talk about liquids in this Mishnah. Hamotzi yayin, if one transfers wine, so the amount that one would be liable for is kedei mezigas hakos, enough to create a cup of wine, like the wine used for benching. What's happening here is that for benching you need to have specifically a revias of wine. Revias means a quarter, and it's referring to a quarter of a lug. The lug, for my shirma, I always, as a reference point, talk about a 500cc, half liter, you know, bottle of soda. That's a familiar size to us. That's roughly what a lug is. There are different shittos on how big the lug was. A revias is a quarter of that, meaning, according to my simplified version here, that's 125cc, roughly 4 ounces or so. It's like half the amount that's held in a small disposable cup. But revias is the amount in your Kiddush cup. The shittas range, in fact, from 86cc on the small side, Rechaimna, up to 150cc on the big side, Chazon Ish. In any case, that's how much you need to make Kiddush. And in the time of Chazal, when they made, and they drank wine in general, they would dilute their wine, one part wine to three parts water. So wine was like looked at as like a concentrate, kind of like a cordial, or you know, if you know Ribena in England, or Petel in Israel, Kool-Aid, etc. Maybe Kool-Aid's a powder. In any case, so the point here is that enough wine, I'll call it concentrate, if you will, that when you add to water, you can make a cup of wine. And since they did it one part wine to three parts water, and the useful amount of wine is one revias of wine, we're talking about a quarter of revias, one part out of four. So again, if you think of the revias as roughly 125cc or 4 ounces, let's call it, so a quarter of that would bring you to roughly 25cc or 1 ounce of wine. On the topic of diluting wine, I don't want to get into that too much right now, but just very briefly, it's brought down the Mefarshim that their wine was very strong relative to our wines. Just as a side point, it's unlikely their wines were stronger than around somewhere between like 11 and 14% alcohol, just like our wines, because after that, the alcohol would kill yeast, and you can't really make wine naturally stronger than that under normal circumstances. So their wine probably was stronger as much as the effects of the wine, like the hangover and headache and stuff, of the wine was potent. And therefore, they watered it down so they wouldn't have that problem. Okay. Next, chalav. As for milk, meaning milk from a kosher animal that you would drink, kadei gemia, one swallowful. How big that is not clear. Some Rishonim learn it's the same as the melo lugmav, one cheekful. That's like Tosfos. Others are a little less than that. But one gulp of wine, one gulp of kosher milk, that's what you'd be liable for. As for non-kosher milk, so since it's not drunk, the shear would be the amount that one needs to use for medicinal purposes. They applied milk to the eye sometimes. So it'd be enough non-kosher milk to apply to one eye, since that is the primary use of non-kosher milk in the Jewish community in the time of the Mishnah. So then that would be the shear. And as for kosher milk, even though, of course, you could apply it to the eye also, since it was primarily used not for that, but rather for drinking, and that's the main purpose for milk, therefore, the shear for kosher milk will be the amount that one drinks, bichde gemia, one whole swallowful. Dvash, as for honey, in the Mishnah, dvash always refers to bee honey. In contrast to the Psukim and the Torah, dvash always refers to date honey. So here we have bee honey, and bee honey is well known to have antimicrobial properties. So they use it as like a topically to put it for a wound. So the Mishnah says, dvash kde liten al hakasis, enough honey to apply to a wound. Bartner learns this is a wound that's on the back of an animal, like from a pack sore, you know, from like a donkey's back or something. Others, when we're talking about a wound on a person's hand or whatever it is, a sore. So enough to apply honey would be the amount that one would be chaya for. As for shemen, here olive oil, that was used to anoint oneself to avoid skin getting dried out or chapped, whatever it is. So therefore, it's kadei lasuch ever katan, enough to apply to even a small limb. Here we're talking about a small limb of a small person. Therefore, most learn, like the Bartanura, that we're talking about the baby toe of a baby. even enough olive oil to cover just the baby's baby toe would be enough. Others are talking about like a pinky of a baby. Mayim, as for water, so water's use is, of course, for drinking, but also they used it to make some other kind of like eye salve. They had this powder called kilor, which they would mix with water to make a kind of paste to apply to the eye. And that being the case, when it comes to water, it's kadei lashuf behem es kilor, enough water to mix with the kilor powder to make the paste that would be applied to the eye. Ushar kol hamashkim, as for all other drinkable liquids, beravias, the shear is a ravias. Again, that's a quarter of a log, let's call it 125 cc, because that's the use for other drinkables. V'chol hashovchin, now we just said water, the shear was the amount to make a kilor preparation, a little amount. But of course, if it's shovchin, shovchin is wastewater. Don't think like what's in your toilet. Just think of water used to take a bath in or, you know, wash the vegetables in and so on. So that you would not apply to your eye. And that being the case, it'd be used just for other kinds of things. I don't know what, for, you know, watering the plants or other, you know, washing things down, etc. And therefore, beravias, the amount for wastewater is a ravias, like other liquids. Now, Rabbi Shimon is going to disagree very fundamentally. His words are simply Rabbi Shimon Omer kulan beravias. Everything is with a ravias. But what he means here is that all liquids, the standard amount for one to be chayev is a ravias, quarter of a log, 125 cc. Now, in addition, he says velo amru. When they said these various shirim before that we just said in our Mishnah, they only said those kol shirin elu halalu. Ela lamatzniehen, for people who set aside this liquid beforehand. In other words, if a person sets aside milk from before Shabbos and he doesn't keep a revius, he actually saves it in less than a revius. Let's say for milk, it's kadei gamia, not for like one swallowful. So then he'll be chayev, such a person will be chayev for that amount of milk, but a standard person didn't set something away ahead of time, so he will not be liable unless he transports a whole revius amount. Now, back in the 7th parak, Mishnah Gimel, we had said that for someone who is a matzniya, who sets something aside beforehand, he would be liable in any amount. Rabbi Shimon disagrees with that altogether. He says there are lesser amounts than revius. Those are for listed in our Mishnah. But beneath this amount, meaning less than, say, kadei gamia for milk, even if you set it aside before Shabbos, you just want to have one drop of milk on your tongue on Friday afternoon, whatever it is, according to Rabbi Shimon, you won't be chayav for that because it doesn't reach the minimal threshold of kadei gamia. Tanakama, back in 7.3, would have said, yes, if you're a matzniya, you save that amount of milk, one drop, so for you, you're chayev. Now, the halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon. So halacha is like Tanakama, meaning that the Mishnah has taken Tanakama at face value. There are smaller shirim for certain useful liquids. Otherwise, it's revius. But someone who's matzniya and sets less than that aside before Shabbos for some whatever use he has, he'll be chayev for the lesser amount. Shabbos Perek Ches, Mishnah Base, 8.2. The Mishnah continues. It's detailing of the requisite amount one would have to transfer various items in order to be liable for Hotza on Shabbos. The Mishnah starts out by talking about Hamotzi Chevel, if one transfers a piece of string. So how long is it, the kind of string, how long is a piece of string that people would normally save for some use? The answer is Kadei La'asos Ozen L'Kupa, enough string to make a handle for a basket. Ozen literally means ear, but here it means like a hanging handle, if you will, for a basket. As for gemi, which is like reed, like a grass, reed grass, kadei lasos talai l'nafa v'la kavara. Enough reed grass to make a talai, a hanging hook, if you will, some kind of loop or other, to hang a napa and a kavara. A napa is a sifter, like for sifting wheat. Kavara, like a kind of like a colander or a sieve. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, now Rabbi Yehuda is going to consistently disagree with various amounts here and have a more strict shear and say even lesser amounts are still useful and therefore one will be liable in the next coming up Mishnayos. In all the cases, the halacha does not follow Rabbi Yehuda. And here he says, if you have a piece of string or a piece of reed, you know what that's good for? It would be useful, kadei litol mimenu midas min'al lakatan. If you want to take the shoe size of your child, a little kid child, so how do you tell the cobbler exactly how big his foot is? Well, you take the piece of string, you'd measure from heel to toe, and you'd bring that little piece of string in and say, make me a shoe for a foot the size of this piece of string. And therefore, for both chevel string and also gemi reed grass, says Rabbi Yehuda, if it's big enough to measure a small child's foot, it's useful and want to be liable. Again, halacha does not follow Rabbi Yehuda. As for niyar, niyar means papyrus. In modern Hebrew, niyar, of course, means paper. But in the time of the Mishnah, and there were really two basic things you could write on. The less expensive papyrus, niyar, the word paper in English comes from papyrus, which is sort of like rolled grass. You see it in, it was used in Egypt a lot. And the other option in the time of the Mishnah really was parchment. That is animal hide, like what we write our mezuzah on, etc. Now, parchment, since you have to kill the animal and prepare its hide, cure it, etc., ma'abed, so that is much more expensive. And now we're going to talk about first niyar over here, which is the papyrus, less expensive. So how much niyar, but all of them were expensive relative to what we pay today, of course. They were all expensive tools. And therefore, the question is, when it comes to papyrus, how much papyrus, the amount that a person would save? The answer is, k'dei lichtov alav kesher mochsin, enough that you could get a receipt on it from the tax collector. The idea is, when a person, let's say, would move his goods down the river, or his person down the river, there'd be tax stations along the way on the river. And when you pay your tax, you get like a stamp, just like today, basically, or not so long ago. So that kesher mochsin is the sort of the two letters that the tax collector would put, like his signature, so to speak, with, you know, two big letters that would symbolize that you've paid. That's your receipt so that you can confirm you paid your taxes. So if it's big enough to get the receipt, just even two big letters that you get from the tax collector, then you'd save that piece of paper so you could get the receipt when you need it. And therefore, that's the answer here. Niyar, if you transfer papyrus, it's k'dei lichtov alav, kesher mochsin, it would be a piece big enough to have the little tax collector's receipt stamped to it. V'motzi kesher mochsin chayev, and if one transfers an actual tax receipt, then he's certainly chayev. You might scratch your head and ask, wait a second, if you're liable even for the paper that the tax receipt could be written on, of course you're liable for transferring the tax receipt itself. The answer is that, well, that's true. You could also have a tax receipt written on parchment. If you have parchment handy, you'd get rid of the parchment instead. And since parchment is more expensive, people would prefer not to do that. And therefore, as we'll see in the coming up Mishnah, that when it comes to parchment, the amount that one would save it for is not enough for kesher mochsin, for a tax receipt, but something bigger, for a little, like a tefillin, one of the parshas in the tefillin, the shortest parsha of the tefillin. So therefore, the normal rule is that for parchment, the blank parchment, the quantity required to be chayiv is larger than the amount for a tax receipt. But the Mishnah is saying here, if you got a tax receipt on parchment, even though it's a small piece of parchment, you'll be liable because now it's significant. The Mishnah says, finally, niyar machuk, if you have papyrus which has been used one too many times, they'd write and then sort of scratch out and rewrite. Once it's become totally smooth out and sort of in blurry and gray, you wouldn't be able to use the papyrus anymore to write on. At that point, it's certainly not useful as a writing surface, but it's still useful for other things. And the case the Mishnah here says is, k'dei lichroch al pi tzluchas ktana shel pulyatan. As long as it's big enough to act as essentially a makeshift cork, you could roll up the piece of paper, the papyrus, and shove it into the little file, the vial, the container you have that's holding perfume, small container for perfume, and that would be enough to stop it up so it shouldn't evaporate, and therefore you'd have a great use for your now worn out and otherwise unwritable papyrus. You could use it as this makeshift cork. And that's what the Mishnah says again. K'dei lichroch, enough to roll it up, korecha, to roll up, al pi tzluchas ktana, into the mouth, meaning the hole on the top of, a very small, file, you know, jar, container, shel pulyatin, that you would use to store perfume, a very small container. That's how much papyrus is significant. Perikhes, Mishnah Gimel, 8.3. We continue with requisite amounts. Here we talk about first ore. Ore is an animal hide. So how much animal hide do you need? K'delasos kamea, enough to make a kamea. Kamea is like an amulet. We discussed it before. Inside the kamea goes whatever goes inside of it, whether it's some parchment or some other secret ingredients. So think of this as being kind of a pouch. So you'd put the whatever ingredients are going inside the kamea in the middle of this little piece of parchment, and then you'd sort of cinch it on top. And then that little pouch would hold it, and typically or commonly people would put this kamea like as a kind of necklace around their neck, whatever it is. But the amount of animal hide that you'd need to hold the contents of a kamea would be the ore for which you'd be hired for if you transfer on Shabbos. As for klaf, as I mentioned in the previous mission, parchment, how much is that? K'dei lechtov alav parsha ketana shebetfilin shehi shema Yisrael. Enough parchment that a person would set aside to make the smallest of the four parshas that you insert into your tefillin, and that is the parsha about Shema Yisrael. Just so you make sure it's clear, we're talking about Shema Yisrael as well as what will be the whole first paragraph, Vahavta. So in total, we're talking about six psukim. Okay, so that smallest of the parshios and tefillin, that's enough to write the reason to keep a piece of parchment, so that's what you'd be liable for. As for Dio, the ink on which you write, with which you write on parchment, Kdei Lichtov Shtei Osios, even enough to write two letters, as we described not so long ago, the whole malach of ksiva, of kosev, of writing on Shabbos that was used in the Mishkan was to pair up boards one to the next. So you put an aleph on the first board and an aleph on the second board. So you know these two boards go side by side. So that's all you need. Therefore, that much ink is what you'd be liable for. Worth noting, just let me speak it out here for a second. So let's say you have just enough ink for one letter. So you'll be exempt. But now how are you carrying that ink? You're probably carrying that ink in some kind of container, right? The ink bucket, the ink well. So you're carrying an ink well with a tiny drop of ink. So we say you're putter because of the ink, but what about the inkwell itself? Aren't you liable for that? And the answer is no. Since the inkwell is really subordinate, tuffel, to the ink, it's the ink carrier. If there's not enough ink, so then you're carrying inside the inkwell, you'll be exempt by transferring the inkwell as well, because it's subordinate, tuffel, to the ink. Finally, it says the Mishnah, kohl. Kohl is eyeshadow. The word in modern Hebrew, kohl in Hebrew, is blue, but it comes from this powdered blue powder that they use eyeshadow, even going back to ancient times, the Egyptians did it and so on. So how much eyeshadow are we talking about? Likchol ein echas, says the Mishnah, even enough to do one eye. Now, if you scratch your head, as you should be, and saying, wait a second, what's the use of just putting eyeshadow on one eye? You look like a freak. The answer is, that's true. The Gemara speaks out, we're talking about a case where, in certain locales where Jewish women lived, they were under like the Taliban or the equivalent, and they were super duper duper tsanua, and all they exposed about their whole person was just not just their eyes, but just one of their eyes. One eye peek out from under the turban. And of course, one wouldn't go out, even as tsanua she may be, with just one eye showing. She wouldn't go out without her makeup on, so she'd put her blue eyeshadow in that one eye. So in such a place, one eye's worth of eyeshadow is useful, and therefore you'd be liable for that amount of kohl. In other places where people put eyeshadow on both their eyes equally, so then it indeed would be the case that one would not be liable for transferring the eyeshadow unless there was enough to do both eyes. Shabbos, Perikhes, Mishnah Dalet, 8-4, more requisite amounts. We start with Devek, which is glue. So how much glue is useful that one would be liable for in Shabbos? K'telitin barosh hashav sheves. For a bird trapper, he's going to put glue on top of his bird trap to catch the birds when they land on it. So enough glue to set one trap, that'd be the requisite amount for Devek. Zephes, v'gafris. Zephes is tree resin, like think tree sap. Gafris is sulfur. So both those things, if you have that resin, you can poke a very, you can use it to, let's say, the purpose for this is going to be to dispense mercury. Mercury, if you've never seen it before, is this like kind of very, very dense metallic liquid at room temperature. You want to get one drop out at a time, let's say. So you want to make a tiny dispenser. So you would have your container of mercury. Mercury is a tricky substance to work with. It amalgamates with metals. That means it combines with metals and joins with them. The word amalgamate you're probably familiar with. An amalgam, like a dental amalgam, actually is specifically referring to a mercury alloy, I'll call it. So anyways, so you want to dispense your mercury, you need to essentially put your mercury in a little glass tube. You want to block up the glass tube and then have a teeny tiny tiny hole that will let one little bead of mercury out at a time. So you take your pitch, your zephes, your tree resin, shove it in the top, and then take a pin and make a tiny hole in that sort of gummy material. So you need enough zephes, pitch, tree resin, or gufris sulfur to block up a little hole and block up the lid, the container of your mercury file, and then a tiny poke a hole inside of that. So let it come out drop by drop. So that's how much zephes and gufris you need. Shava is wax, honeycomb beeswax. K'dei liten al pi nekev katani. If you have a tiny, let's say your wine barrel has a tiny hole in it, so how do you stop the tiny hole up? Take some wax and shove it on in. Enough wax to fix that tiny hole would be the amount you'd be liable for. Charsis. Charsis understands that Bartanura is crushed bricks. So you have a brick and then you make it into like brick powder, if you will. So what would that be useful for? That would be useful for K'dei la'asos pikur shel tzorfei zahav. Goldsmiths need to make a little furnace to heat up the gold, to melt it and control it. And what would happen is, you know, how do you make a furnace very hot? You have to push lots of oxygen into the fire. So you use a bellows, that kind of like an accordion thing that like you open and close and it shoves a lot of air really fast through a little hole. So you would stick the end of the bellows into the furnace to get lots of air in there and pump it away. And you want to sort of make a snug fit so the air goes in and doesn't just sort of like come in. It's effective that you can direct the air into the furnace and doesn't come out again. So you have to sort of like close the hole so it fits snugly against the furnace. For that, you would use charsis. Reb Yehuda Omer, K'dei la'asos pitput. Reb Yehuda's makel, and he says not enough for the furnace entrance, but rather crushed brick. Be useful even for fixing a leg. Pitput is like one of the three legs that they use to support their kira, their outdoor stoves and ovens. It's small, and the point is even fixing a pitput would be enough of a use for crushed brick, charsis, to set it aside. Reb Yehuda once again having a more strict view, and the halacha doesn't follow him here either. Subin is bran, and apparently bran burns very hot. So if you have a scenario where you don't have charcoal and you're a goldsmith, so instead of burning charcoal, you'll burn bran. That's what it says here. Says the Mishnah, Subin, how much bran? K'dei liten al pi kur shel tzorfei zahav. Enough to put at the entrance of the goldsmith's oven. Now, Sid we've seen before, it's quicklime. So quicklime, calcium oxide, is pretty nasty stuff. It is used primarily for industrial purposes, like to make mortar and plaster on walls, but also you could use it as a cosmetic. And as a cosmetic, its primary use is as a depilatory to remove hair. It also kind of burns the skin a bit, so it gives your skin like a nice ruddy shine. And therefore, kind of the same way women use rouge today, whatever the story is, they would use this Sid to make their faces shine nice and red, and also to remove hair from where they don't want it. So the Mishnah says here, how much Sid is useful? K'dei lasud katanish bebanos, enough to cover a small, like a pinky of a little girl, to remove the hair off that one pinky. Interestingly, there's a Gemara has a story that baby Barabaya, he wanted to make his daughter look beautiful, get her married off, so he essentially used Sid to make her squeaky clean, hairless, and I guess very shiny and red and ruddy, healthy looking. And he did it limb by limb, pinky by pinky, finger by finger. And that's why the Mishnah here is saying that one limb is enough. The Gemara goes on to say how he got a fantastic offer for his daughter, and his next door neighbor who was not Jewish, by the way, who thought to pull the same stunt as Bebe Bar Abaya did, and he essentially doused his daughter in the Sid, and the poor girl died because it's that caustic, and he accused Bebe of having killed his daughter. In any case, the Gemara goes on to say that normal girls wouldn't need this, just Bebe's daughter was swarthy, she had like dark hair, a lot of hair. The Gemara suggests because they drank a lot of beer in that house, whatever that means. Be that as it may, the point is that since it's a depilatory and it's used limb by limb, even one limb's worth, one little pinky and a little girl, would be enough Sid to make it quicklime, to make it significant, and one would be liable for that. Reb Yehuda Omer, K'dei la'asos kilkul. Reb Yehuda has a strong, more stringent shear, even less enough to, like, kind of like hair product to, like, gel back the hair at the girl's temples. I'm not sure how it works as a gel, if it's also dissolves the hair, I don't know. Apparently that's that, to sort of dampen down the curls. And Rabbi Nehemia Omer K'dei la'asos andipi, he understands it's not to kind of push the hair back, but perhaps push the hair down or something else. Andipi is kind of going on the temple, a little lower down than where the hair normally is. So again, he's applying it, says Rabbi Nehemia over there, as a kind of cosmetic to make the girl look good. Whatever the case is, the halacha does not follow Rabbi Yehuda nor Rabbi Nehemiah, but rather the Tanna Kamma. It's enough Sid to anoint one little girl's baby finger. Shabbos Perek Ches Mishnah Hey 8:5. More requisite amounts. We start with Adama, which is clay. Kachosam Hamartzufin Div Rebbe Kiva. Rebbe Kiva holds it's enough clay to make a seal on a commercial like shipping bag that would go in a ship, whatever it is. The Chum say no, even a smaller amount. Chum Omrim Kachosam Haigros, even enough to seal a private letter, it's a smaller amount. Again, the way they would do it is they would kind of like this, remember the signet ring? They would put the clay to seal the letter or the packing bag, give a unique seal with a stamp with the signet ring, and that way you could know that the contents of the container hadn't been tampered with. Halacha is like the Chachamim, even a private letter seal is enough clay for that to be liable. As for Zevel V'chol Hadak, if you're talking about manure, which is like fertilizer, and fine sand, these are used, you know, to apply to plants, help them grow. Kadei lezabel kelach shel kruv, to apply enough zevel manure and fine sand to apply to a single cabbage stalk. Div Rebbe Akiva. Rebbe Akiva says one cabbage is enough. Chacham say even less than that. Chacham omrim kadei lezabel kresha, even one leek. Leeks are smaller than cabbages. Halacha follows the chacham again. Chol hagas, if it's not fine sand but rather coarse sand, so you wouldn't use that for fertilizing, etc. Kadei litan al malo kaf sid, what you would put it on is you had a sid is again the same as before. It's the quick lime, but here it's being used commercially or industrially as say for plaster or mortar. So you're applying sand to the mortar. So some of the pshat here is like concrete to harden, you know, to add strength to the sid. More so concrete, like stronger mortar. Others learn that we're talking about plaster over here, and normally you'd plaster your walls to make them shiny and white with sid. But here we're, according to some shots anyways, we are making the sid less bright white by adding sand to it as part of a zeichel hamikdash to remember that the basic English isn't around, and therefore we sort of make our homes not as beautiful as they otherwise could be. You're probably familiar with this halacha in a different but similar application, that when one has plaster on his wall, he leaves a section of his wall unplastered altogether, an amma by amma section of the wall unplastered by the entrance of the house to remember the mikdash. So be that as it may, so we're saying here the halacha is if one kaf, like a trowel, you know, a trowel is like the little, the kind of like triangular, you've seen like the guys laying cement use it, to scoop out the cement. So one of those would be enough sand to apply to one of those of sid would be enough to be a significant amount of sand. Kane, as for a reed, think of like bamboo. So how much reed bamboo is useful? Kde la sos kulmos, enough to make a quill. Think of like a fountain pen. Vim haya ave o mursas. Now fountain pens require that the gauge, the hole inside the bamboo tube is narrow, so not much ink comes out at once. But if it's got a big hole, a wide hole, so then, like in the tube, then a lot of ink will come out too fast. It'll be blotchy, no good. Therefore, it's useless as a pen. Or similarly, if it's mursas, if it's cracked, broken, crushed, whatever exactly mursas means, the quill can't work as a pen because it's broken. So then it's not useful as a quill. Instead, it's just basically firewood. And as firewood, how much are you liable for? Kedei levashel bo beitza kala sheba beitzim, trufu nesuna beilfus. Enough firewood to cook the easiest thing that you could cook, which is a single scrambled egg, of the kinds of eggs that are cooked the easiest, which Chazal say are the chicken eggs. And we're talking here about it cooked in the easiest way, meaning it's scrambled with some oil inside of the scrambled egg and put on a preheated frying pan. So again, kedei levashel, in order to enough reed that can't work as a pen that could provide the fire and fuel, I should say, to the fire to cook levashel bo beitza kala, to cook the easiest of the cooked eggs shebe beitzim, which is a chicken egg, trufa, and the egg is scrambled with some oil unasuna beilfas, and put inside a preheated frying pan. So not very much wood or reed at all. Shabbos Perek Ches, Mishnah Vav, 8:6. Again, more requisite amounts for one to be liable for Hotzah on Shabbos. And although it can get a bit tedious here, as we have lots of lists here, and it's, you know, not that interesting, perhaps, it certainly is interesting to see how they lived back then, and this really gives us a window into that. In any case, here we go. We start with the etzem, a bone, an animal bone. So animal bones, what are they useful for? They would convert them into spoons, like ladles. So etzem kedei la'asos tarvad, a bone, if it's big enough to make like a measuring spoon or a ladle out of it, so then you would save it, and that'll be fine. In case you're wondering about Tumah and Tahara, there's obviously a lot of things I could talk about here, and I don't want to talk about any of them, but just FYI, a bone only conveys Tumah if there's flesh with it, but a perfectly dried out bone doesn't convey Tumah, even if the bone is from a nevela, etc. Okay. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kedei La'asos Me'enu Chaf. Rabbi Yehuda once again is a machmer. He says you could find uses for smaller bits of this material in case of bone. He says you can make a chaf with it. A chaf, some in the pshat, is like a tine and a key, like the little, like a tooth of the key, so like a key that goes into a lock. Others learn it's like the tooth, if you will, that's inside the cylinder of the lock, so it's a catch. Whatever the case is, the point is bone is useful for those purposes, says Rabbi Yehuda. But the halacha, again, not like him, like Tanakama, it's enough to make a ladle. Zechuchis. Zechuchis is glass. What's glass used for? So an industrial use for glass is very sharp, as you know, and actually very hard also. And therefore, it's great for, it's like a carving tool. So zechuchis, a piece of glass that's big enough, kadei legror bo rosha karkar. If it's a big enough piece of glass, you could use it to sharpen, like the weaver's pick. The weaver has this little tool, the karkar, that's used to sort of separate the very narrow and dense warp threads that are going in the loom. So if they get crossed or knotted, whatever the story is, he wants a very kind of fine point to adjust things. So he needs a very sharp tool to sharpen his fine point. Nothing better than a nice piece of broken glass for that. So if the glass is big enough to do the sharpening of the karkar, it's useful to save. Tsror or Evan, as for rocks, I'm not sure, to be honest, the difference between a tsror and an evan exactly. Normally, a tsror is, I think, smaller than an evan, but here, obviously, it's the same, so I'm not exactly sure. But how big of a rock is useful? Kadei lizrok ba'of, says the Tanakhama. If it's big enough to throw at a bird to chase it away, we're not killing the bird here, we're just scaring the bird away because it's bothering you. So you get rid of the pigeons with the rock, then if that rock is big enough, you would save it as the bird chaser, and therefore you'd be liable for transferring it on Shabbos. Rabbi Elazar bar Yaakov disagrees, and he holds that you don't need rocks to scare away birds. Birds are scaredy cats. You can just go boo and they'll fly away. And therefore, you need a rock that's bigger for something more useful. What's that? Kadei lizrok bavehema, to chase away an actual animal. You got a, someone's cows in your backyard. You want to get rid of it. You got to throw a rock at the cow to get it to move away. It's a bigger stone that you would need. Again, halacha is like the Tanakhama, that you even a bird's sized stone is enough. Shabbos Perek Ches, Mishnah Zayin 8-7. More requisite amounts. Here we talk about cheres. Cheres is a pot shard. So how much pot shard would be enough to save it? Kadei liten bein patzim lechavero. If one has, let's say, boards, like wooden boards or wooden columns, wooden planks. So if you're going to stack them and they're not exactly all equally lined up and smooth, because there's like a hole in one or a dent or whatever. So then you stack the boards can get warped by their weight, one pushing into the hole of the next. And therefore you'll sort of use a piece of clay to fill in the gap to prevent the boards from warping. That's what we're talking about here. So that's Rabbi Yehuda Shita. Cheres kdei liten bein hapatzim, excuse me, bein patzim lechavero, between one board and the next board. That's how much clay you need, pot shard. That's Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Meir Omer, kadei lachatos bo esaur. He says, like lachatos, remember like Shema yechate begachalim, lest you come to stoke the coals. It's that word here. So chitu is to move aside a coal. The idea is if you want to get like a little smoldering ember out of the fireplace, which you might want to use to start another fire, they have matches back then. So you need like a container that can reach in and pick up and hold the smoldering coal, which you can move to a new fire and blow that into flame again. So that's how much cheres would be useful. That's what it says here. Mer omer, kadei lechatos bo esaor, another enough to move a bit of smoldering coal from a fireplace. Rabbi Yossi omer, kadei lekabel bo revias. He says no, even a smaller amount, enough just to hold one revias of water, like if you're going to take water out of the ground, you know, like from a puddle or whatever. So one revias, not very much. So let's call it 100 cc. That's a smaller amount. The bigger amount would be enough to move the coal because you need to have some distance between your hand and the coal so your hand doesn't get burned. Okay, so we have three sheets here on how much pot shard would be the halacha. Now, Amar Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir, who held the halacha was enough to move the coal, says, even though I haven't got like a hard, you know, nail it shut proof that I'm right. Zeich l'davar, I do at least have an allusion, a reference to point to in the Pesukim, which would suggest that I'm right. Because when Yeshaya, Isaiah the Navi, starts telling Klal Yisrael, don't have your political hopes resting on Egypt, you know, that hope can pop like a bubble in a second, and it used the metaphor of Egypt is like this big barrel of, like a clay barrel, which can, like, you know, burst in a second. So 1 second it's there, looks very sturdy, the next second it bursts asunder to a million bits and pieces, and that's what's going to happen to Egypt. So the Navi says Egypt will be like blown up to smithereens with tiny bits and pieces of clay, and the clay will be into such small bits and pieces you won't even find a clay piece of clay big enough to take a coal out of the fire. So Rabbi Meir says that suggests that what's the smallest useful piece of clay? Enough to take a piece of coal out of the fire. Inside the Mishnah says, Rabbi Meir says, Afopi she'ein ra'i ladavar, I don't have a conclusive proof. Zeich ladavar, I do have at least some reference that hints to this idea in the Pesukim, because the Pasuk says in Yeshaya, V'lo yimatzei b'michtaso, you will not find in its, like in the debris of the blown up clay barrel that is Egypt, Cheres lechatos eish miyakud, enough of a piece of clay to pick up a smoldering coal from the fireplace. Now, that was Reb Meir's proof against Reb Yossi. The problem is that the pasuk isn't over there. The pasuk says you won't find a piece of clay big enough to move a smoldering coal, nor enough to take a bit of water to draw some water out of a puddle. So, that being the case, Rabbi Yossi says, if that's your raya, then it's a raya to me, not to you. Because the very pasuk that says you won't be able to find clay to move out of the fireplace, it also says you won't find a piece of clay shard big enough to draw water. I'm Rabbi Yossi, Misham raya. Rabbi Yossi says you can bring a proof from there. The pasuk ends by saying, V'lachsof mayim migeve. It even says, nor will you be able to find a bit of clay big enough to draw a bit of water out of a puddle. And so therefore Rabbi Yossi sticks to his guns. Reb Meir, however, understands that that's meaning even a useless piece of clay, which has no point whatsoever, it's just so small you couldn't use it, but at least you could draw some water out of a hole. Even that you won't find. That's how he understands the pasuk, how Reb Meir does. Okay, fine. The halacha, however, is like Rabbi Yossi, meaning the halacha is l'chumra here, that it's the smallest shear. If you have enough broken clay to hold one revius of water, that would be enough to make you liable if you transferred on Shabbos.